Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 436, recorded November 3rd, 2024.
And today we're starting off a new miniseries with the Star Trek 2022 series and another installment in the Defiant series where they're on that planet fighting Romulans. You always call it the Magnificent Seven storyline.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what it is.
Yep.
And even though this is a new, quote, storyline, at least a new title anyway, which is a multi-parter in Star Trek 2022, it's still just a continuation of the previous one. So,
right.
The post, what's happening after Lore set off the tachyon bomb or whatever kind of bomb he set off.
Right. That killed all the gods and possibly the whole universe.
Well, that's what they keep saying. But obviously, unlike most explosions, it isn't near instantaneous. Apparently, it's taking a while.
It's a big galaxy. A big universe.
There you go. That even reaches into other domains beyond normal universes.
Yeah, we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, we will. Okay. Well, let me just say up front. And I said this to you before, I'm enjoying the Defiant stories better because it's just more grounded, more believable. It doesn't ask quite as much of your suspended disbelief as the Star Trek 2022 stories. They're just way out there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, all the storylines for the 2022 has been somehow related to gods and stuff like that. Or right. But godlike events, and it's just like, you know, I already had a problem with some of the god stuff in Star Trek, you know, with the Apollos and the things like that, and now you're like, every storyline they've done so far is somehow related to something like that.
Right.
Kind of getting god fatigue in that story, maybe a little bit.
Well, you don't have to worry about gods anymore. Now it's lore war time. Right.
Lore's a god, almost. Or I guess he is, because he's recreating the whole universe in his image, possibly.
That's what he keeps saying. So.
Right. So I guess we'll
find
out.
I'm just surprised how long it's taking.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's a big, big universe. Takes a while for that that explosion or that wave to get there.
And apparently, as we're seeing, as we thought, are they saying this is just one universe, or is this the is this thing going to affect the multiverse, to use a Marvel term, or maybe other people have used it too? I'm just used to it being the Marvel term lately. But we're going to see that it goes into another realm, and I really anyway, whatever. We're going to see it.
Let's get going.
So I get to do the first one. This is Star Trek 2022, issue number 25, and the title is "When the Walls Fell." Part one, published date October 2024. Creative team is lots of the same folks we always see on these. Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing are the writers. Artist is Megan Levins. Colorist, Lee Lowridge. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production by Neil Yataki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assistant, Cassandra Jones. Okay, we got three covers. Cover A presents the Theseus, cut up kind of sort of into three pieces and shown in kind of three facets, each having different backgrounds. Text at the bottom, "Countdown to Lore War." And the art is by Ramon Rosanas and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features Sisko and most of the bridge crew's heads. Data in particular is at the top. They're all in kind of like a translucent outline of the Theseus, a species 8472 guy's head is in the bottom half looking menacing. And that art is by Leanna Kangas. The third cover is a retailer incentive cover and presents Tom Paris with perfect hair, Sato, and Scotty's head and upper bodies within a species 8472 guy who's kind of in the background, upper left, and he's kind of looking over everything and is threatening. And that one is art by Jake Bartok. Tom Paris is in a conference room briefing Captain Sisko and the senior staff on the inhospitable fluidic space that they find themselves in. And worse, they are not in space. They are literally in fluid. Physics does not work the same here. Their sensors are useless and their weapons are hobbled. And like the oceans of Earth, there are dangerous life forms that live here and will come a-calling. Tom says we are alone now, but within hours, species 8472 will find them. And their favorite motto is, the weak shall perish. They need to get the ship on a war footing as soon as possible before they arrive. Reading Captain Janeway's report, Sisko points out that she and Voyager crew made peace with species 8472. Tom responds saying Janeway made a supplemental log entry later in which she explained her suspicions of a future conflict with species 8472 that would be devastating to the Federation if it ever happened. She thought sooner or later the Federation will come in contact with species 8472 again, and they will not come in peace. Well, today will be the day we meet again. Sisko takes in what Tom has said, but he still wants to at least try peaceful contact at first with 8472. Tom is told to take a break and cool off for a while. When he's ready to return to his helm station, it will be waiting for him. Sisko returns to the con and sends out hails to species 8472, saying they come in peace. Later, Talir says something is in his head, and they are not speaking. They are screaming! The ship is buffeted by impacts from 15 or more hostile ships, some of whom are firing on Theseus. Species 8472 troopers beam onto the ship and start attacking crew members. Sisko is knocked out cold. Crusher tries to fire on the intruders, but is clawed across the face. Dushinny and an ensign are able to escape the bridge and immediately contacts Tom, who is the remaining senior officer not compromised by the boarding. Dushinny enters Tom's quarters and finds him holding his crying daughter, Rao. Talir is in a roomy airway conduit, contacting Tom for instructions. Scotty and Data's head are in engineering, welding entrance doors closed. All three groups are in contact with each other as Talir continues to be in telepathic contact with 8472. He finds out from them that fluidic space is boiling. Data explains Lore's bomb is affecting fluidic space also. Tom figures they need to get out of fluidic space ASAP or they will go down with species 8472. Data and Scotty come up with the idea that they can get the ship moving and even out of fluidic space by using, you guessed it, the mycelial network. Suddenly, Scotty's explanation is interrupted by Admiral Janeway entering into Tom's quarters. Tom recognizes it's not Janeway, but rather 8472 using its handy ability to shift its shape into Janeway's. It gives Tom the option of surrendering the Theseus and giving them a way out of fluidic space or perish. Tom distracts the Janeway imposter long enough for Dushinny to finish synthesizing nanites that she injects into the imposter, which immediately kills it. Scotty and Data finish explaining their mushroom trip plans and ends saying they need to get their best pilot at the helm. Tom and Dushinny take off for the bridge from Tom's quarters, leaving Morale with the ensign. Tom orders Scotty to beam all the 8472 beings off the ship, which clears their path. From the bridge, Tom and Dushinny pilot the ship out of fluidic space and into what at first appears to be the Alpha Quadrant. Sisko is back and thanks Tom and the others for saving them all. Tom says the stars do not look right. Data confirms he is correct, and after consulting with stellar cartography, says there is a 120-year discrepancy. Sisko asks for clarifications. We traveled in time? Sato reports incoming hail. She opens the channel to Captain James T. Kirk eating an apple. Kirk identifies Sisko and the Theseus by name, introduces himself, and says he's been expecting them. To be continued.
And this is Captain Kirk of the NCC 1701A.
Yes, in the Kelvin timeline.
Yes.
Yes, so this is Chris Pine Kirk.
Yeah, I'd seen the cover for the next issue, and it just shows Captain Kirk and Sisko, but I did not pick up when I saw it before that it was Chris Pine Kirk.
Mm.
Because the Enterprise they show on the cover looks very like Taz era.
Oh, really?
With the tube nacelles and all that stuff. So I was shocked when I turned that last page and it was the Kelvin Enterprise A.
Why aren't they consistent? I'm sorry. I mean, I know they have different people doing the covers, but it's like, don't you think they'd be consistent? At least not using
Maybe it was a spoiler thing. They didn't want people to see the cover before they saw
it. It definitely works for you.
Yeah, it worked for me.
Definitely worked for you. And I do like the idea that they're using the A, so the newer one at the end of the Beyond movie.
Right.
So we're able to see a little bit more of that newer version in action. Not that it looks, I mean, it's different, but I mean, definitely from the last page of this book, where they're shooting it, it doesn't look that much different from the 2009 version.
Right, right.
I know the pylons are a little bit, the nacelle pylons attached to the engines a little bit further forward. But other than that, I mean, from this angle that they're drawing, it doesn't look that much different.
Mm-mm. Nope. So I'm really wondering if this Chris Pine Kirk is going to remember the times that he's met Sisko in the past. Because there was that whole crossover between Sisko and Kelvin.
Yeah.
Thanks to Q.
I agree. And that would at least partially explain how he knows Sisko by name. But he was expecting them? I look forward to that explanation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we have to wait like 4 weeks to find out. So it's just like, oh man, it's gonna kill me.
And I just hope they do a good job of it. Just come up with an explanation that makes sense, please.
Right, right. Yeah, what if it is Q popped over there and warned them? I don't know. It's probably going to be Sisko's mom.
Yeah.
I mean, because...
You think? Sisko's mom?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. Well...
Isn't she trans-dimensional, so couldn't she pop in and... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? Like you said, it's all too much, so...
Yeah.
Whatever they say is going to be the reason.
Okay. So the Qs were not involved in any of this. So they got out of Dodge or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah.
And the only godlike beings that have been in this series, you know, recently that are still alive, I agree with you. It's Prophets. Prophets? It's the wormhole Prophets. Alien.
Yep.
So I guess that would make sense if it was mom.
We'll see.
Indeed.
But anyways, very rarely am I as surprised as I was when I turned that last page and just like, oh my God. Because I was, when he said it was 120 years, I was like, all right, so are we going to be in the past or the future?
Right.
And then she says, oh, it's a doozy. And I'm like, okay, we might be in the past. And then turn the page and it's the Kelvin. I was just like, oh my God. I was not expecting that.
And I know this could be a perspective thing, but I think they are trying to get across the point that the Enterprise A from the Kelvin universe is significantly bigger than the Theseus.
Right.
Now, technically speaking, I thought the Enterprise A. In the Kelvin universe, yes, it is significantly larger and looks more technologically advanced than the old TOS one, supposedly because of the contact with the Narada, whatever.
Right.
But then over time, starships started to look bigger, right? And I have seen some pictures that show Enterprise D, Enterprise E being in the ballpark of the same size as the Kelvin.
Oh, really?
Enterprise. But
yeah, I have noticed that in like some of the blueprints type comparisons that they seem mm-hmm. to have shrank the Kelvin from what it was back in 2009.
Oh, really?
It's like they're retconning it. Closer to TOS? It was never quite as big as we thought it. They said it was in 2009.
Okay.
I don't know. I've just seen some of that. So I'm wondering if that's okay. What you're talking about too.
Well, that could be part of it. But, I mean, you know, the Enterprise D is a lot bigger than the TOS Enterprise.
Right.
Right? A lot bigger. Over 1,000 crewmen as opposed to 500.
500 or so, yeah.
529, something like that, in TOS. And quite frankly, there has been some criticism of the original Enterprise, just to say that looking at the ship, and especially how big the bridge was depicted to be in the cage pilot, it looks like it's just too small to hold that many people. But whatever. Anyway, we're getting off track. Anyway, so in this last picture where it shows the Theseus and the Kelvin Enterprise A, the Enterprise A looks bigger, clearly bigger than the Theseus.
Right.
So in ways, that's cool. It makes sense. In ways, it's like, yeah, but... I mean, by this point, the Theseus is probably about as big as the Enterprise F? Or is it smaller?
Think it's that big? I think it's smaller.
Okay. So maybe it all makes sense.
Because isn't the frame supposed to have been from like a TOS era type ship? They've just
think you're right about that. So Scotty's been working on reworking the space frame or whatever from an older ship.
Yeah. So speaking of ships, what'd you think of the Theseus doing the Discovery jump?
Mycelial whatever flip thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, they supposedly don't know anything about that, right? So they supposedly erased all the knowledge of it.
Right.
And all that work that Stamets did to make that drive work, I mean, because he did a lot of research, right, with him and his partner and stuff, and mm-hmm. to make right. all that work. And that took a long period of time to get that all working.
Yeah.
And they supposedly, Scotty and Data, don't have the benefit of any of that or specialized equipment or anything. Right. And then in like no time at all, they're able to get that to work in the Theseus. It's like, oh, guys, you're just asking me to just accept too much. Anyway.
Yeah, and they said all they did was like fill the warp tubes with goo, fungus goo that they replicated. It's just like, I would think it would take more than just, you know, replacing the fluid inside your warp nacelles.
Yeah.
To suddenly be able to do this kind of jump.
And they didn't have a benefit of a tardigrade or anything.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't happy about that part. I was just like, nah, that's just too much. I know you needed a cool way to get out of fluidic space, but I don't know. Trying to tie it in with Discovery, I didn't think it worked.
No. Too much to believe.
And it's horrible because they're not fixing anything. So all these poor fluidic space inhabitants are still boiling alive in their own universe.
Oh, yeah. They're dead.
Yeah.
But like, they were attacking, so screw them.
Yeah, they were just trying to get away. They were stampeding, trying to stay ahead of this boiling water. And they just get beamed back into the fluid and jumped out. It was... Yeah. I thought that was a little like there was no resolution to their plight.
Well, but they're aggressive poop heads, so tough.
I think you would be an aggressive poop head too.
I'm not shedding any tears over them.
If your universe was on fire and you found a lifeline somewhere, I think you would try to jump aboard.
Well, and that's another thing. Didn't 84, okay, so 8472, so it was actually the Borg that figured out how to get to fluidic space, right?
Right.
And then it was the Borg that tried to assimilate 8472, and they found that they bit off a bit more than they could chew.
Right.
Now, did 8472 ever come back to our universe?
I don't think they did, but they were planning on attacking, right? Because they created this whole like Earth colony and stuff, and it looked just like San Francisco with, it even had Boothby in it and all that stuff.
Right.
So they were trying to like recreate Starfleet so that they can then replace it. So.
Oh right, yeah, with the handy thing that they've got the same powers as the founders, apparently.
Right. Shape shifting.
Handy.
I thought they were onto something when they're talking to the Janeway and she's like telling them why, and Paris is like, you know, I get it, you're just trying to save the people you love, and she says love's a new concept to them, and then they just shoot her and it's over. It's just like, I really thought they were going to make a connection there, and
nope. Well, I think they were making it pretty obvious that they're taking the ship and supposedly taking their knowledge to help them get into normal space, or what we think of as normal space.
Right.
Out of there. So apparently they never figured out how to get into our universe. Okay. At least as of the end of the Voyager episodes. Okay, fine.
Yeah, and I guess that storyline continued in the video game, Star Trek Online, because even in the back of the book, they kind of make reference to some aliens and stuff that were from the video game and not the Voyager episodes.
Yep. Yeah, and that primer was very handy to me. I had read the Defiant book first, so that's where I saw it. So they also included that little primer on fluidic space in both books, apparently. And so that was really helpful for me. But it introduced two different species on top of species 8472. And I had no clue where that came from. And you did a little research and you figured out that was from Star Trek Online. So great research, Donovan, because I was clueless.
Emphasis on little, because all I did was search for that Geki thing and it came up with Star Trek Online.
Well, there you go. But you did more research than I did on it. I just like, what the heck's that from? Moving on.
And it looked kind of like the little child that was nursing on the Enterprise D.
Little?
Yeah, little. Just a little baby out there.
Was that first season?
I think it was second season. Yeah.
So second season, Next Gen.
One of the early ones.
Some space whale something is suckling on the warp core.
Right, and it kind of looked like this thing.
Yeah, but that was not in fluidic space, so I don't know.
No.
Maybe they just look similar, but they're not.
Right. Back to this issue. I didn't really like how Paris was just kind of a whiny. I mean, I get that he was trying to protect his daughter, but I don't know, to get dismissed like that and then just go to your quarters and just be huddled up in the corner with your daughter, being like, oh.
Trying to protect her.
I mean, was he? It seemed like he was whining and cowering. And that's not Paris. He's not a cowerer.
I completely agree with you. So instead of having Paris the way he always was, which is heroic and smart and, you know, whatever, they have him as kind of a sad sack, not heroic until he really gets his mojo. And then the good thing at least is he's acting more like a human being, where most of the Starfleet characters are just better than real people are, typically. I mean, like almost every one of them are better than real people.
Right.
You know, they're mostly great. They're smart. They can fight almost anybody and they're brave and, you know, all that kind of stuff, where at least they're presenting him as more of a, almost like more of a Barkley, you know, a little bit more of a. A little whiny, but he's brave enough to at least figure stuff out over time, right?
Right.
So that's good, but I agree with you. This is not a consistent characterization of that character.
Yeah. So just to be cowering, I get it. You want to protect your daughter. You would do anything to protect your daughter, but
sure.
I don't think you would just huddle up in the corner and let everybody else do it if you're a Paris, right? I mean, he's taken control of the ship before, you know, he's been in the thick of it before, right? And, you know, yes, he has a daughter, and yes, he wants to do anything he can to protect her, but I just don't see him doing this. And then it wasn't until Dashani smacks him around a few times. And
exactly. Like, it took her. It took her to get him to step up.
Right. Yeah, I didn't like that.
Which it was good for her because she was able to do something. So that's great, great. But that's not Tom. And by the way, like Harry, he's still only a lieutenant. I mean, he was a lieutenant on the Voyager. And so everything they did in the Delta Quadrant all those years, and they're back, and he's still just a lieutenant? I don't know.
Well, timeline-wise, he's been back for less than a year, so...
Okay, but still.
And then in Season 7 of Voyager, didn't he get demoted because he... of some insubordination shenanigans?
Well, I know there was an episode of Voyager where he was insubordinate, and he got in trouble, but that was all a setup to get him inserted with some other group of people.
Mm.
You know, making him think that Tom was defecting when he wasn't.
Yeah,
is that the one you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about one where I think the episode actually ends with him getting demoted and then
what, to an ensign?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I don't remember that.
He and Kim were at the same rank for a while.
Oh wow. Okay, I don't remember that. But of all the series, except maybe Enterprise. I really haven't gone back to watch Voyager that much.
Yeah, I get it.
I'll watch Next Gen again. I'll watch TOS. I'll watch DS9. But I don't go back to Enterprise much, and I don't go back to Voyager much.
You're missing out. Those are the best two.
What? I know you like Enterprise.
I do like Enterprise.
The best? Is it the best?
I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to pick a best now. They're all good.
Well, yeah. Oh, that is so politically correct. Okay, fine.
I can pick a worst.
Yeah. Okay, what's worst?
The animated series.
Oh. it had its charms.
It has its charms, sure.
Okay. Okay, fine. I'll go with that.
Anyway.
Okay. Can I mention something about the artwork? This is kind of the artwork too, but when Species A472 is initially attacking the ship, there's a nice full page, or maybe it's two pages, drawing where there's like 15 different A472 ships that are all around the Theseus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big old nasty ragged chunk out of the saucer primary section. Hull.
Right.
Saucer section, right. Big old, it's not really a saucer though, but yes. Big old chunk out of it. And then it's like, okay, yeah, they're in trouble. You want us to all be worried. How will the crew get out of this? I mean, one 8472 ship probably could take on the Theseus, and there's 15 of them here. So, like, how's this going to happen? And then I was just saying in the back of my head, they are not going to pull BS where it's magically looking great later. And I paged forward. Or back into it. So page 21, it looks like, oh no, on page 9 is where it looks like it's got chunks out of it. It's white colored. It looks like it's in distress.
Mm-hmm.
And then magically on page 21, when they do the mycelial network travel thing,
yep,
the Theseus is pristine. That big old chunk out of the primary hull is perfectly repaired.
They filled it in with mushrooms.
And it's also glowing blue. The whole ship, not just the nacelles or the or the deflector dish. The whole thing is glowing. Now I guess that's the mycelial whatever, but come on. There's no way anybody had the time to go out and fix the hull.
No.
I'm sorry.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah. I just
really hate that.
No, I thought the same thing when I was reading it. And then another artwork thing that I thought was really weird.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's just the drawing. But when Paris takes the seat, the command chair, yeah, it looks like he has a mustache.
Oh. Like
the way they drew it, it looks like he has like a Gomez Adams type mustache. I mean, I'm sure it's supposed to be supposed to be his lips, I guess, but they just didn't color in the middle part of the lip, so it just looks like a little pencil thin mustache.
Oh yeah, you're right. Oh, that looks terrible.
It looks weird, right? I even had to go back and look at previous pictures. I'm like, maybe he has a mustache in this story and I never noticed, but no, he doesn't.
No, that's his mouth though.
Yeah, it's his mouth.
It's his mouth, but they didn't. Why did they have that break in the middle?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the art in general.
Okay.
There are a few panels I think I like it, even though I think the artwork is two-dimensional, simplistic, low detail. I mean, it's fine and everything, but it's not great.
Yeah.
It's not very realistic looking. And there are some panels, despite that, I like the drawing. Like, there's one thing where Data's head is sitting there. I think it looks awesome. Yet on that same page, there's a drawing of Cisco that looks terrible. So, anyway.
No, I'm with you. And Paris never looks like... Paris and Crusher, to me, look inconsistent throughout the whole thing. They do not look like the actors at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a little like the actors. Come on. But not enough
that you know who it is, but I would not say that looks like them.
Yeah. Okay, so we're in agreement on that. Since we're still talking about artwork, there is something I cannot explain. I guess the only way I can explain it is a graphical error, a mistake that got published.
Oh, can I guess what it is?
Sure.
Is it that Scotty has a balloon tail for a face?
Well, it's like a white triangle.
Yeah, it's like a word balloon. Like they took out the word balloon and left just the little tail, and it just covers his face.
You're right. That's what it is.
Yeah, that would bother me too.
So I'm looking at this thing. It's like it's a white elongated triangle with a black outline only on the bottom two parts of the triangle. The top is flat. And it doesn't have an outline. And you're right. You're 100% right. That's the bottom of a word balloon.
Right. Huh. Yeah, at first I thought it was like a plague doctor mask or something. I'm like, why is Scotty wearing that? And then I was like, oh, no, that's a word balloon.
That, you're right.
That they took out the dialogue for some reason.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Good point.
Because at first I was just so focused on Crusher using that mirror to do surgery on her face. Uh-huh.
Right.
That I didn't even notice that for a while.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Because I'm pretty much done.
That's it.
That's it.
Well, I'd say.
All right. Let's jump over to Defiant issue number 20. Is it 20?
20.
Yeah, 20. What? All right. So issue number 20. This came out October of 2024. The back of the book has three covers. Cover A is by Angel and Zeta. And it shows a very muscular Romulan holding two knives coming up at the reader. And we see that behind the reader is probably Worf holding a Batleth, because we just see the Batleth coming up over the camera. Cover B is by Marcus Tu and in colors by Lee Lowridge. And it shows O'Brien. I mean, I know that's who it's supposed to be, but it doesn't really look like him, holding a phaser rifle and a phaser pistol and a bunch of Cardassians about to shoot him. Then the retail incentive cover is by Deacon Shalvey, and it shows a very stylistic picture of a Cardassian standing there. Everything's yellow and maybe on fire, and we see some Cardassian ships up in the sky. The writer of this issue is Christopher Cantwell. The artist is by Angel and Zeta. Colors by Marissa Louise. Letterer is Clayton Cowles. Design and production, Neil Yutaki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assist by Cassandra Jones. The story starts with Miles recounting a war story to Dr. Bashir. And he's talking about how he killed a Cardassian commander who was trying to crawl away from the battlefield. Miles speculates that his action might actually constitute a war crime, or was he justified since the commander was in charge of the army that killed so many others in the battle? Miles tells his friend that he will never join Section 31, to which Bashir states that he also has never joined Section 31. And then O'Brien states that he's going to go and help Worf regardless to what Section 31 is wanting him to do. Meanwhile, in orbit over Antara, Ro's ship takes a hit and she is crashing towards the surface. On her way down, she has a flashback of her father. On the surface, Worf sees the crash as Romulan forces beam down. His makeshift troopers of farmers are no match to the fanatical Romulans that are beaming down. Though the farmers are surrounded and in the open, the Romulans stop using their disruptors for absolutely no reason, and then they start attacking with knives. Worf is goaded on by the leader while the Klingon is shown killing many, many Romulans. Lots of decapitations and severed arms here. Eventually, the Romulan gets a few good pokes into Worf with his knife, and Worf seems to be surrendering. As the Romulan gloats over him, his chest explodes with the impact of a rock projectile. It seems that Worf was only buying time so that Ro could line up an amazing shot. Back in orbit, B'Elanna's ship is saved by the sudden arrival of the Defiant. Elsewhere on the surface, the captured Praetor is able to escape his makeshift cell, but then he's killed by the Antaran's matriarch. Back at the Romulan ship above Rator 3, Subcommander Ravo is standing above Spock, Sela, and two other Romulans who were captured last issue and are sitting here with handcuffs. He kills the two Romulan no-names, and then he aims his murderous attention towards his daughter and Spock. To be continued.
Darn him.
Yeah, good thing he killed the ones we don't care about.
Okay, so do you really think General Revo is going to kill Sela?
No.
No, I don't think so either. So here's my prediction. He will try to kill her. He'll intend to kill her, but something will delay him. Like maybe word of subcommander makes Mayek, whatever, failure to take Antara.
Possibly.
So something's going to, I think he's going to want to. I think he's going to intend to, but something's going to delay him.
I don't know.
And by
he
the
might,
way.
He might just suddenly start loving her, like his heart breaks. Just Grinch style grows three sizes that day.
He is the Grinch. I doubt it.
Mm. So you think Revo's shaving his head like that so that he looks more like Shizon?
He wants to look more like Picard? I don't know. Maybe. But he does look... So he looks like a mustache-twirling villain.
Oh, totally.
And quite frankly, most of his actions are pretty... you know, single dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
He just seems like just a very aggressive villain. Traditional, not a lot of, you know, motivation. You know, what's his motivation in the scene? No, you're not given a lot of that. He's just a nasty one.
Right. Right.
And that's why I believe he will try to kill Sela, really, in the next issue. Yeah, how about those handcuffs, huh? Boy, they look really effective.
You know, they cover up the whole hand.
Exactly. There's like no way you could get out of that. Although, right. If you wanted to hit somebody over the head, it looks like it could give you a nice club.
Yeah, it would.
Huh. Anyway.
I like Spock's face when Revo shoots those two guys. Spock's like, lips are pursed, like, ooh.
The true astronomers. Like Spock is saying, oh, no, you didn't. Yeah. And so by the way, them turning into ground pepper, that's pretty cool looking.
It does look cool, yeah.
The two bodies.
Yeah. Reminds me of like when the Daleks shoot somebody and they turn into a skeleton for a half a second, right. And then they go back to being normal. So I really have a hard time with the timeline as far as when does Spock know that Romulus is going to explode? Because this is before Nemesis, which is years before Romulus actually explodes. So if he knew about it now, then why is Romulus so ill-prepared when it happens?
Yeah, it's kind of mushy. From the 2009 movie, you know there was a period of time before Romulus was destroyed that everybody knew about it. And that Spock and his attempts to stopping it was something the Romulans knew about. But exactly how long that time period was, I don't know. Did Spock really know Nero before?
In the comic books, he did.
Okay, so he did know.
Comic books, yeah.
Right, in the count. I thought so. So they were working together or something was going on. So they knew each other beforehand.
Right.
So all that had to take place. So there is some time period after Spock knows about it before it actually happens. But exactly how long that time period is, yeah, that's a good question. It's not clear.
Yeah, and there's like a five-year gap between, maybe even more than a five-year gap. Maybe like a, I don't know, maybe almost 10 years. 10 years from the events of this book before Romulus actually explodes.
Oh, okay.
So why are they so ill-prepared when it happens?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
There is a chunk of time there. At the end of Nemesis, Picard's still on Enterprise E. The band's still together. Riker hasn't left yet. And we know by the time the countdown thing happens, Riker's gone. Picard's on the...
What's he's an ambassador.
The inquiry?
Oh, you're talking about in Kelvin, in the Kelvin storyline. The Picard countdown. Not the Picard countdown.
Okay, yeah, the Picard. The Picard TV series countdown.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So I agree with you. So that's your basis of the 10-year estimate, which could be right. That kind of makes sense because, you know, Worf's gone doing whatever. He's on the inquiry, you know. Of course, they're also in the middle of trying to... Yeah,
because the Mars attack happens like a couple years before Romulus explodes. Is that what you're going to talk about?
Right. Yeah, because they were in the process of trying to prepare to get people off before it went boom, boom.
Right.
Okay, so yeah. I kind of agree with the 10-year. Mm-hmm. That's a decent estimate.
You were saying for this issue, they do mention that Revo's plan is to somehow use Antaro as... the new Romulus, they're going to move the headquarters there.
Yep.
Which doesn't really make sense because you would think that the Romulus Empire would have tons of other planets and other solar systems.
Mm-hmm.
So why?
Ones that were this one? Yeah. Ones that were already pretty far along being developed. Right. So why don't you take that over and that's the new capital. And sure, you can distribute the people from Romulus, although there are a lot of them. So you can move the government and move as many people as you can out of the Romulus planet system, whatever. Why would you need a whole new planet to move lock, stock, and barrel everything to? You don't have the time to do it also. They don't have the time to do this.
Right.
I mean, unless they leave behind the vast majority of the population.
Anyway. Yeah, I would think 10 years you would have enough time to... move them off. I mean, even if you were doing them 1,000 people at a time.
Yeah.
You know, if every ship could move 1,000 people, if they're all as big as Enterprise D. I don't know. It just seems...
I don't know either, but...
You might not be able to get everybody. I don't know. That seems like a lot. And it doesn't seem like it's just one solar system that gets destroyed, right? So even in Picard Countdown, he was getting people off of a colony world that wasn't in the Romulus star system. So...
Oh, yeah. Well, the original story, as we all remember, is this. It wasn't the Romulan star that exploded. It was some other star and some other. It was in Romulan space, but it was not the Romulus
timeline.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the thing that led to the Kelvin timeline.
Exactly. Right. But we know that story wasn't canon because it had Picard being an ambassador to Vulcan and stuff like that, not what we saw in the Picard TV show.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyways, but yeah, so here, if they were trying to cloak their own star and it's the one that's going to go boom, boom, then yeah, why would that also destroy a colony world on Alpha? You know, like another star as close as Alpha Centauri wouldn't be destroyed just because our sun went
I completely supernova. Agree. Well, that was part of what was, you know, we all called BS on the 2009 movie.
Right.
That the idea that an explosion one star could reach even the closest star system, that it could reach it that quickly and still have that much power to totally nuke that other star system.
Right, right.
I mean, the whole thing made no sense. But at least if it was the Romulan star, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So that makes sense here, but it doesn't make sense for that Picard timeline or that Picard countdown where he was getting people off of another ship, another solar system.
Yep.
It's almost like this stuff's not real.
it's like they're just making it up.
It's whatever the writer wants it to be.
Exactly. Anyway.
So the Praetor is dead, so we're going to have a new Praetor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the new Praetor is the one that Shizan's going to kill in about a year.
Yeah.
So at least they're keeping that storyline up. I don't see any holes there yet.
No, not yet.
So did you understand why the Romulans, one, beamed down instead of just attacking them from orbit? And then two, once they were all grouped in a little circle, they stopped shooting them with phasers and then started going at them with knives. Did that make any sense at all?
Well, the only thing that makes more sense is that if you have somebody surrounded and you're firing inward, you can hit your other soldiers.
Sure.
So that's the only thing I could see that would make any sense why you would switch to knives from guns. Guns work real good. Yeah. Although I will also say something that could have partially explained why they went down and just did this, you know, hand-to-hand combat crap, is because this subcommander Mayek or whatever, he's insane. I mean, look,
crazy.
He's crazy. I mean, he's like, I'm the biggest, baddest dude, and I've got the biggest, baddest commandos as part of my team. I just say one thing, and then they say just the right thing back to me. It's just so cool. Okay, we're all going to go down and have fun with a bunch of hand-to-hand combat and just show everybody how well endowed we are.
Right. So yeah, and like when he's like on the bridge, he's like on his knees with his arms outstretched, looking up at the sky.
What the hell's all that about?
Yeah, it's like this is more like a religious experience, not a commander of a military group.
Exactly.
It was weird. I did not know what was going on there.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, because it like you just said it, it seemed like a religious thing. It seemed like he was praying to God or something. But I'm pretty sure the Romulan Empire is secular.
Yeah, you haven't heard of it.
No religion, really.
Yeah, no Kalis on the Romulan side.
Right, right. So, I don't know. He's a psycho Romulan. And you knew for a fact, as soon as you saw this guy an issue or two ago, you knew he was going to fight Worf.
Right.
But at least they had some fun with the fight. It didn't go the way you were expecting.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, the whole idea that Ro was able to survive that crash. I mean, she was in space.
She was in space.
And she was heading down at high speed. I doubt that she was able to quite engineer just the right reentry angle to avoid burning up in space. Because that's the thing. If you come in too steep, doesn't matter what your tiles are like, you're going to burn up. And I know this is advanced, whatever. Although it is like a 500-year-old Hirogen ship or whatever.
Right.
Anyway, the main point is she comes down from space. She crashes. Yes, it looked like the ship was intact, but really?
Oh.
I had my questions whether she was going to survive. It's like, are they going to kill off Ro? And then the ship was, huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
And so, but the ship, they showed it was intact. So it's like, okay, she's probably not dead. But then the fact that she was able to get out of it and then join the fight. Now that's one thing, you know, how I had criticized or 2022 comic, you know, going a little overboard You know, I thought the Ro thing was a little overboard, but whatever. It was cool that Worf didn't do the obvious thing. He used his head. Maybe this muscle head did outmatch him. That could have been completely the case. And then he saw Ro and he used his head by surrendering, by delaying him a bit.
Right.
And so she could get into a good position to shoot him. So. Right.
So in regards to Ro crashing, there is that scene where she's listening to her father and her father saying he'll be with her forever, just rest now and all that stuff. So you really think that, well, maybe they are going to kill her off. I mean, you don't really think that, but I mean, it's that's
looking like
they
it.
Want you to think.
Right.
But then Worf sees the crash miles away. And I just don't believe that she was able to make it that far.
That kind of.
Yeah, and that, you know, she doesn't have like a dune buggy or anything. So she's walking after being crashed, and she's still able to shoot him in the back. And it's not even like a long shot. She shoots him like almost point blank in the back.
Yeah. And she just walks up to Worf. Hey, Worf.
Yeah. And then she falls and he has to like carry her. So she used her last little bit of energy to do that.
Right.
Walk those miles and miles and miles. Anyways. I like Ro, but I just did not believe that she could make that trek.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about the other lady. So B'Elanna. B'Elanna is up there. She's the only one firing on this more advanced Romulan ship than the old piece of garbage she's flying. And plus, she's dealing with that fighter, that snakehead fighter.
Right.
So she's about to go down, and then she doesn't say this, but basically she is preparing for ramming speed. And then all of a sudden, the Defiant comes in and saves her. What does that remind you of?
Every show ever?
Yes. However, First Contact.
Yeah.
Totally. So you remember. Yeah. So in the beginning battle with the Borg cube, but it's Defiant who's in Ro's place. And then it's the Enterprise E coming in, swooping in to save the day. So it just was, it was cool and everything, but it's like, this is so First Contact. But
yeah, good point. Yeah. And then we don't know how that battle ended, right? That was not resolved at all.
I agree. I mean, I guess they just assumed that, you know, the Defiant was going to kick the butt out of the, I'm sure that O'Brien took out the snakehead.
But that Romulan ship still looks bigger than the Defiant.
Yeah. Which, that's okay, because the Defiant punches above its weight.
That's true.
So, but still, you're right. It was unresolved. Maybe we're going to see, maybe how that worked on the next issue?
Yeah, I guess.
Because the way they left it on that planet, they left it where the old lady shot the Praetor.
Right? Yeah, I was surprised on that one, too.
Yeah.
She didn't want to get involved, but she'll kill the leader. And then when he says, "You killed the Praetor." Good.
Like, yes, exactly.
She's
ice cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my last comment here is I liked the little flashback to O'Brien's time with the Cardassian War.
Yeah, let's talk about that, shall we?
You know, they always talk about O'Brien's time in the war, you know, but we don't really get to see much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I was kind of surprised to see that it was a land-based war with, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys and phasers flying everywhere. It was just a much more brutal war than I thought it was with when you think of Star Trek fights, it's always like ships and stuff.
Right. But O'Brien did explain situations during that war where, you know, he was in some place where he was on a planet. I guess it was Setlix 3. And didn't he was not like a technical guy, but he figured out how to get a portable transporter to work or something. And he was able to, you know, save whoever he was with by using it. So I knew enough about that I knew there was ground combat. However, this was nicely gritty.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. And it was black and white. So that kind of made it look, you know, a little bit like, oh, well, it's a flashback. Okay, fine. But it also made it look a little more gritty, didn't it? If it was black and white.
Yeah, no, it did. Like an old war movie.
Or Casino Royale, that first Daniel Craig Bond one, where he's in the bathroom and in that brutal fight, and they made that black and white. I think using black and white can be very effective in things like this. Anywho, I thought it was
then they show
awesome.
Him get shot in the face. He shoots that guy square in the face.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see the projectile
the
coming
beam
out.
Come out the back?
Yeah.
Yeah. The beam comes out the back of the guy's head.
Yikes. That's something you don't see.
Oh, it was violent.
With energy weapons.
Yeah, and you don't see... But that's the way an energy weapon probably would work, as opposed to, you know, disintegrating somebody, right?
Right, right.
So... Anyway, I thought it was awesome. That's great.
I did too.
Now, the fact that O'Brien is using a Cardassian pistol.
They all were.
All of them were?
Yeah, I think so. No, you're right.
No.
Only he's the only one that's using a Cardassian pistol. Okay. Everybody else has Federation.
So I assume what that's insinuating is that, you know, he'd been fighting for a while. And, you know, either he ran out of power packs or he lost his gun or something and he had to pick up a Cardassian pistol. Mm. And I also, so that's kind of, you know, that's cool. That's kind of like Halo, right? You pick up a, you know, an alien weapon. It's like, hey, that's pretty good. Also, I think they definitely wanted to establish that he had a Cardassian weapon. So he didn't even have an option of setting it for stun.
Good point.
This is definitely not typical Starfleet, but this is not a typical Starfleet situation. So, I mean, this is soldier stuff. This is war stuff. I mean, you think of Starfleet as being more Navy or maybe more Air Force or something, right? You know, you're not doing hand-to-hand combat, right?
You're
using a ship of some kind or a plane or whatever. But this is like ground pounding Marine Army soldiering going on here. So,
right.
Which, speaking of which, what did you think of the soldier outfits of the Federation? Because
they were definitely different.
Different, but it's like, wouldn't you think you'd have some kind of body armor? I mean, even if a helmet, right? A modern day helmet is not going to stop most bullets, but it gives you some amount of protection.
Right.
It could deflect things. It could help you with shrapnel.
Shrapnel.
Maybe from a hand grenade or something. So you wear it, right? It's not perfect. It's not going to stop the bullet that's aimed right at it, but you get some amount of protection. Wouldn't you think they'd have some kind of body armor?
Yeah, why not wear the...
Something for their head?
That motion picture armor that
exactly.
they
had. Exactly. And that's like, that's 100 years ago. So it's like, come on, guys. Have the football player outfits for motion picture, you know, security.
Maybe this vest or whatever creates like a little force field. And that's
So he's got a harness on, right? And it looks like there's like three bags or something. I thought that was extra power packs for the phasers. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
But you're saying maybe it's a device.
Yeah, it's not. I'm just making that up. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
No, there's no such thing. Aside from the animated series, there's no such thing as a portable personal force field.
There you go.
That I know of.
Me too. So they have some kind of tactical gear here, but it's very Spartan. It's very minimalistic.
Yeah, that vest thing almost looks like, you know, what a parachute jumper would have, you know, just without the parachute part.
Right. It's really just a harness.
Right.
With three bags in the front. Yeah, you would think they would better equip them. But whatever. Okay. So here's another thing. I need to comment on some of the Federation weapons. So if you're looking at not O'Brien, but everybody else, there is a scene where three Starfleeters get shot. Mm-hmm. And one guy has a next-gen pistol, okay? Not a dustbuster.
One of the smaller ones, yeah.
Exactly. So that's cool. That makes sense. And another guy on the left, furthest away, has a Deep Space Nine phaser rifle, which I never liked the looks of those, but that's what they got. And then the third guy has a First Contact phaser rifle. So it's like, cool. a little bit of variety. They represented all the, well, most of the phasers. I guess the only thing they're not showing is that big thing that Janeway used to use. Voyager, that rifle. But that all looks really good. Good job, guys.
Is Although it good? Because why would the first contact phaser be there if this is 10 to 15 years earlier than first contact?
Oh, okay. Okay, that's a good point.
They should be the Dustbusters.
Okay, so you're right. But I hate the Dustbusters. and the first time we saw the phaser rifle, but that's the first time we saw it, was that in Deep Space Nine or was it in Next Gen? The first time those popped up.
I think we saw it in Next Gen.
Okay. But they could have had those.
Sure.
Just because Next Gen didn't actually use them until whenever they did it.
So, but yeah, good right point. Now they're military, and then later they'll just get put on all the science ships.
Okay, good.
Makes sense.
You're right. It should be Dustbuster pistols. Although I'll also comment that the leader of that squad, who is not O'Brien, he's got a pistol in his hand, and that, if you look closely at it, that is not. I've never seen that phaser in Star Trek. I mean, it's kind of similar, you know, to the normal. I think some people might have called them Snakehead, or were they Cobra phasers? I don't know. But the main one they use in Next Gen. So right. It's got the hand, you know, but it's curved. And then look at the picture. It's a little different from anything I've seen before. So
yeah, and it looks like it has like chunky bits on it. Like it's not as streamlined as those Snakehead ones.
Yep. Looks like it's bigger. Past the hand, past the grip, it looks like it's a bigger device. Anyway, I really like that part. Okay.
That's a lot to say. And then you notice that Bashir says he's not part of Section 31.
Mm-hmm.
So that does kind of line up with the original post-Nemesis timeline books.
Okay. Good.
So he still might join Section 31 later. And then those books can happen.
Right. And as we conjectured, Bashir joined Miles on this little jaunt.
Of course he did.
Of course he did.
But where's that little shuttle that he had, the one that could take ships out of warp? Did they? Was it small enough to fit inside the Defiant?
Well, the Defiant only has room. I believe the Defiant only has room enough for one shuttle.
Right. But remember, this shuttle was in that same design. So if he didn't already have a shuttle, he could just go into that.
Yeah. And I don't know that they don't have a shuttle.
Defiant was abandoned somewhere, so maybe Worf took the Chaffee or whatever?
Chaffee.
Yeah, so maybe that's how they got off the Defiant. I can't remember. No, they were captured by Sela, right?
Revo pulled up in his gear decks, and they got him off.
So it never explained why the Defiant was just abandoned.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think we talked about it before. I mean, wouldn't you want to know something about the Federation, that Federation ship? Wouldn't you take it? Wouldn't you put it into tow and bring it back so you could learn some stuff about it instead of just leaving it out there? Yeah. Well, so it's not perfect. It's not a perfect comic, but it's pretty good.
Right.
Anyway, I enjoyed it. Anything else? I definitely liked the Defiant book better than I like the 2022.
Right. Book. But again, they both end, and I can't wait for the next issues on both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So,
hangers.
Anything else?
Nada.
Nothing. So, unfortunately, we do have to wait, but we got some Star Trek one-shots that we get to do instead.
Yes, we do.
So next episode, we are covering Star Trek 500, their IDW's 500th Star Trek book, which is a little short stories of 8 different short stories all in one book. So we're going to do a whole episode on just that. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we get to do the Lower Decks Warp Your Way graphic novel, which is a choose your own adventure with our Lower Deck crew.
Should be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you come to a panel that says,
here's your three bullet points. Go to page blah, blah, blah if you want this to happen. Go to page blah, blah, blah if you want that to happen. Go to, you know, so. I mean, it's like Dragon's Lair. It's got to have, I mean, you just can't make it up out of the blue.
Right.
It's got to, it's the options that they've got there. You've got to pick your own option. So it's your, it's like a smorgasbord or something.
Yeah. And it looks like, you know, there's several vastly different storylines that go on.
Okay.
And we get some surprising guest stars from some Taz characters.
Hmm. I've not seen the book yet, so cool. As surprising.
I think I did spoil one for you. A did you? Particular bare-chested individual. And then you screamed out, "Con!"
Oh! Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. It's not completely bare-chested, but yes. Got that big old opening.
Yep.
In the jacket. Cool. I'm looking forward to that. I love variety stories. Lots of variety.
Yep.
And we get to find more about the lore war.
The lore war.
So there's a little teaser. Oh, by the way, I missed it, but they actually did show in the issue the Defiant blasting the Snakehead to bits.
Did they?
They did. They actually showed that. So it's down to just the bigger ship. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, they did. Well, they showed it getting hit.
It looks like it.
Right.
Well, looks like it's getting hit pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Those quantum torpedoes.
Yeah, I want to see O'Brien bring her around to the bigger ship to see what happens. That's more of the match. Cool. Okay. We'll see that not next time, but a few times in the future.
Yeah. Next episode or next issue for them.
Yeah. So that 37, 38, 39. So we'll probably find out in 439, episode 439.
Probably. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening.
Look forward to seeing you next time on the review.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.